Okay, guys, today we're here to talk to you about the journey to enterprise cloud. I'm Nick Pickering, I look after the software side.
I'm Brett Alexander, I'm a solution architect for Datacom and I'm an infrastructure guy.
So, does anyone know what we're going to talk about today and what the journey to the cloud really means? Yeah, so what we want to do today is basically take you through a real world example, not just about putting a website in Azure, about putting a whole enterprise in Azure. Take you through the approach we did and show you some of the lessons learned. First off, the background, what the challenge was, how we tackled it, and then just talk about the experience. So a bit of background. Zespri is a global company. You can see some statistics up there. Huge global company, 30% of the volume for selling kiwi fruit across 53 countries. Now, the reason we put that there just to say that it's not just a small little outfit, it's a global company we're looking at.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the technical stuff behind what we've done, what we based a lot of our experiences with here, right? So the organization actually has data centers distributed, two groups of data centers distributed over New Zealand and Antwerp. They have a very large SAP environment in New Zealand, and on the European side, they actually have like a FlexDB, which is their logistics side that basically helps them deliver the product and the fruit all throughout Europe. There are, from a numbers size, we're 300 plus servers and currently in the environment. They're using standard VMware kind of technology today's. Pretty common, you'd see in pretty much what I'd say any enterprise organisation in New Zealand today.
So I think the key point there is the some of the technology that are in place. There's a lot of applications, there's a lot of data centres, SAP platform, there's a number of .NET stack within their environment, BizTalk, SharePoint, Exchange, .NET applications. A wide spread and a diverse spread. So one thing we always like to talk about in these is going back to basics and understanding what the actual challenge was. You know. So the customer came to us and said, here's what I want, guys. I want to integrate the teams. Same processes across the company, instead of having slightly different approaches between different continents. I want predictable and manageable costs. I want to be able to scale up and scale down. So, you know, these are all good buzzwords, but what does that mean? Well, when you look at a company like Zespri, who are selling kiwi fruit, they've got a number of offices and a number of markets they want to get into. You know, they've got new variants of kiwi fruit that they're developing to try and combat the PSA virus. So their company could expand quickly or need to pull in the belt and tighten up. So scale up and scale down was key for them. Increase speed to market. They wanted to be able to take new products and do major programs of work, say in the SAP field, at the same time while running the BAU environment. So they wanted to span up new environments really quickly, which in a traditional on-premise sense would have taken a long time. And they basically wanted to focus on adding value to the business and look at that, the running of the operations to a commodity provider. And one of the other ones that touch on about removal of risk, if you look at where they are, the data centers in New Zealand specifically, they're based in the Bay of Plenty. And after the Christchurch earthquake, businesses started to realize that, you know, natural disasters, earthquakes, tsunamis, they're all real threats now. And having a data center within, you know, 10 Ks of each other, between your main data center and your DR, isn't acceptable in this day and age. So based on this, we needed to look at what approach to take. And the reason we talk about approach is there's no perfect fit, right? You really need to go back to basics on this one and back from the start. The key message I want to get you to get out of this session today is it's not the same. So if you need to do anything today, and when you do look at these things, it's not a case of just moving your infrastructure. You need to go back to basics. You need to understand, where do you want to be? What do you need to achieve out of this? What does success look like? You need to think about, who can help me? My vendors, my suppliers. What do I have now? So you might have some, 10 or so applications in your environment that don't cause you any trouble. When you go to cloud, they might do. So it's really key to understand what you've got now.
Okay, so some of the very first things we had to do, obviously, as part of taking the business to the cloud, was to actually work out where. Now, this is actually, this model we've actually used in a few places now to actually ascertain actually some of the options we have. And so, quite clearly, you can read it for yourself. So, where most of the New Zealand people are probably currently, most organisations today are pretty much in the legacy space. So some of the things, when we went through the process of starting to identify some of the business applications and actually where to put them, there's a number of interesting challenges that start coming out. Obviously, cloud maturity is one of them, and actually what's available in the cloud space today. But fundamentally, we sat through with the client and we actually went through and said, okay, this is where you sit, and these are the options today. And one of the key takeaway messages for this is that if you start from your own infrastructure as a service, so yeah, you maintain your costs, you've got your flexibility, and you've got options. But as you start moving to the right of this model, you effectively start moving into a utility compute model. And that point in time, though, that you lose the flexibility, you can't modify and customize your application suite as much as that you wish to do on-premise. And so effectively, you typically sit somewhere in between this model. So when we went through the process with the organization, we stepped through this, and we'll show you some more details shortly. And actually, we had to say, okay, where do they fit, and where do they want to go, and how do we get them there into those particular models? So So it's the process we use to do that. Very, very, very common model. Okay, do a bit of discovery, and anyone that's sort of in our space, actually would always go through some sort of discovery of some shape. And from there, we actually then ran through a cloud assessment tool. Now, at the time, there was actually no real cloud assessment tools available anywhere. So at Datacom, we actually built some. We actually created our own cloud assessment tool set, and we worked through that to determine actually where the applications fit, where they couldn't go. And from there, we sort of worked through a matrix that we could then present back to the client. And it's something that if you're going on the same journey, you're going to need to be doing this yourself. You're doing the same things yourself.
Yep.
Okay. So from the cloud assessment, thanks, Nick, we then worked through actually the choices on around some of the commercials around the costs, where to fit, and we've got some stuff to talk about that. Yep. So discovery. As you can see, let's welcome to the real world. This was one system in this organisation, and anyone who's in an enterprise space is probably familiar with the complexity of the size of this. So it's not just a simple web application SQL model. Actually, this is actually integrating, and it actually has some of the business process and everything else all wrapped into this model. So this is the place where we had to start. Going through this process, there's a number of things actually you discover, right? Clearly, obviously, what they have. But more importantly is actually, what are the interconnection points between the two? So when we start looking at cloud and actually doing the journey to migrate them, you actually start to understand what kind of stickiness you need between applications. And that's quite important, because you just can't lift up everything and move it at once. So determining all your touch points, what you're going to impact, how you impact it, is a very, very key piece to actually to get you to the cloud. So we went through this process. We spent quite a bit of time with the customer, with both their enterprise architects, their software development team, their actually service delivery people, and we worked through all this stuff to sort of ratify all the stuff out. Mm.
And why this is really important is, one of the messages is, it's not just an infrastructure job anymore. I work in the software space, and I was involved in effectively a data center move. It's all about the apps, right? You need to understand the apps. You need to understand which apps running off which infrastructure and how they're talking to each other. And the reason for this is when you're getting a hybrid model, you've got to start thinking and weighing up around the pricing. You know, what can go where, what can stretch, which of these lines can stretch between infrastructure, between applications, and that's the really hard bit. And if you miss out this step, you're gonna find trouble later on.
So, based on this little bit of effort, we then moved on and said, how do we actually present this to the customer in a way that they actually could understand, because it's complicated and we don't make any bail of it right. So as you can see, we came up with a sort of matrix to determine basically fit. Simply, where's the best fit? And as you can see, we did identify things in the red, and we used a simple colour scheme for obvious reasons.
Yeah. And the reason we did this, listing the applications, again, it's all about the apps. List the applications, the technology, even the infrastructure software applications you're using, you know, that you're using every day, might not be supported in public cloud. What we needed to find out is, where is everything compared to on-premise, and some down here, some of your performance criteria of what you're trying to achieve against an enterprise cloud that you can get from a provider within New Zealand, and against Azure and AWS and some of the other big players from a public cloud perspective. The key issue you can see on here, there's a lot of different colors. Basically, what we found was they're not all the same. To take a few quick examples, did anybody in the crowd know that if you take one VM in Azure, you get no SLA with it? Yep, one. Right, so that's another point to take away. You need to double up in AWS and Azure and all public clouds to get an SLA, right? So when we look at here, around two VMs for SLA, the next question is, well, will my application run across a highly available infrastructure and load balance? Can it handle that? So there's risk. You're introducing risk. So you're getting a lot. There's a lot of fantastic features within public cloud. There's a lot of saving of money, but you need to look at it really closely to make sure it makes sense for your business. There's not one cookie cutter approach. Another couple of ones, extra license costs, potentially. You know, if you double up your VMs, you might, depending on your licensing model, you need to consider that. Do you want to go through this?
Okay, so based on this simple model, we actually then moved it back to so we got the application portfolio, and then we actually stamped it over this map effectively and said, where does stuff go? And where does it make sense to go? Right? And how long is it going to take us to get there? What's the cost of doing that? And we started building this framework up based on this, right? So as you can see, we were talking about Office 365 is obviously to the very right side, where SAP effectively sat in the infrastructure as a service space is currently the customization this organization has done actually doesn't actually sit in a PaaS or a SaaS model at present. And so we've gone through this, and as you can see, We've looked at a number of things, and part of this process, as you can see, we looked at a number of the Microsoft products at the time, and it's quite surprising how many of their own products actually don't even fit into any of those services from a customization and delivery perspective. An example of that is Exchange and Microsoft Flink going into like an Azure cloud. That currently there are some limitations on that. So we had to work through all that sort of stuff and sort of lay it against the model.
And at each step, look, I don't know whether you guys experience it, but businesses are saying, right, I want to go software as a service, right? So you need to ask why. What's your driver for that? Is it security? Is it to bring costs down? Is it flexibility? Because depending on what you want to do, depends on the answer. So giving one example on here, looked at SharePoint. So when we went through the process, we said, right, here's an application, SharePoint. Could we put it in a SaaS model? Could we put it in Office 365 Online? You look into it, look at the pricing. Yep, looks good. It's worth looking into more. And then you look at the actual implementation that the customers have, and you say, how customized has it been? Does it meet the prerequisites of the SaaS model? No. A lot of the time, people have customized the platforms too much that they won't fit in the SaaS model. they won't fit in the, in a lot of the time, they won't even fit in a platform as a service. And what I mean by that, it's a provider like Datacom providing a SharePoint platform as a service. So some things need to come back to infrastructure as a service still, because it's the right place, financially, for flexibility, for change. But also the one, the analogy I like to use is around a house. So, you know, when I was first came to New Zealand 10 years ago, me and my wife had rented a flat, one bedroom flat. It was really cheap, really nice. Then we bought a house. So we got a big house, we didn't use it. We spent a lot on that house to start off with, and it would have been cheaper to rent, right? Fast forward a few years on, now got a couple of kids, we have family coming to stay, we have a dog, you know? I'd probably need three flats now to rent three flats, and that wouldn't be efficient. So the decision of where to go on here depends on your scenario, your customers or your company's scenario. Are you going to fill the house? And then, therefore, the price makes sense to keep it either in infrastructure as a service or platform as a service? Or are you going to, or do you need the flexibility to ramp up to three flats and then down to one?
Okay, so based on this framework and stuff, we then obviously went on to the million-dollar questions, which was worrying about the cost aspects, right? Because basically, put it bluntly, pretty plainly actually, most conversations around cloud transition is all around costs, right? CIOs, CEOs, CFOs, it's the dollars. It's the numbers that make sense to them. The choice of where they put the infrastructure and the technology, it's really generally not a major concern. So as you can see here, so part of the process, price shootouts probably the top of where we could say, but what the key things I want to sort of say in this thing is, in the slide here was, I see and I hear a lot of conversations where people do pricing. So everyone goes onto the Azure and even our own Datacom pricing from cloud services and actually go, what's the cost of a VM? Now, the biggest challenge, you know, it's a conversation I regularly have here, is that it's not just the cost of the VM, and we'll show you why shortly, but it's effectively you need to price up the total cost of delivering the service, not the server, right? As Nick's already talked about, when we go and put servers in an infrastructure as a service into Azure, you need to basically double up on all your servers to get your system availability to give you an SLA, right? And so effectively, so that one server now becomes two. And then if you actually have service management on top of that, either with a provider or a vendor of some sort, then it's actually two lots of that and so forth. So, and if you start putting on your backups, your DR, your recovery, you're starting to actually magnitude it pretty quickly. So
effort to deploy, licensing costs, you know? So and shared platform. So when we talked about the stickiness, you know, if you move you've got 10 applications running on the same SQL Server instance at a database level, you know, if one of them won't go, do you have to duplicate your SQL services having SQL environments, one on-premise, one in the cloud? So you really need to think this through closely. Don't compare VM to VM. You need to look at the real costs. You need to look at the costs based on a high-level design. If you don't, you're going to fall over at the end. You need to think about everything.
We're going to hold the questions last, but I could probably ask that. We spent probably the bulk of our time actually in infrastructure of the service. The RDS service actually has only come out, right? So, and when we've had a look at it, we sort of said, okay, it's in the file, but we actually haven't modeled on that. So short answer, this is pretty much concentrated on infrastructure as a service because we understand that most of the enterprise spaces initially on the cloud journey are probably going to use infrastructure as a service based on the assumption that a lot of the customized apps are not quite PaaS or SaaS available today, okay?
The other key point that raises is when you look at the categories of an application and say, right, will it fit? If cool. Two, can I make it fit? And three, no, it's never going to fit. You know, it's not supported, whatever. The middle ground of can I make it fit comes back to financial modeling. So if I'm saving money on my platform, which is Azure's a data center, right? It's a really good one, but still a data center. What I need to think about is, how much am I going to save a month by using that platform? Is the expense to do the application remediation, i.e. the project to push it up there, is it going to pay you off in the long run? You know? And going back to the house analogy, you know, I'm going to have to pay 20 grand to my estate agent to move me between houses. Is it worth it in the long run? Am I going to get what I want from a quality of life perspective, from what I need, from my strategy? And is it worth it to me? So you need to think really carefully about total cost of ownership.
I'd like to make a note on this one. So we model this specifically for the client, for their environment, for their size. Okay, so the keynote here, this is not just what I'd call an industry comparison. This is actually what the customer would have paid, actually a comparison for the infrastructure that the customer had against the other services. Okay,
yep.
So.
And the last point I want to make on there, if we had done this for another customer with a different set of apps that needed a different set of application remediation or had different requirements, you know, they weren't global. You know, they had a preference for a certain technology. They weren't highly in the Microsoft stack already and could start to leverage the platform as a service and the Azure websites and all the other cool stuff you'll see later on today. If we'd have done this for another customer, those actual numbers and whether it's better to stay on-premise, go with a Datacom Enterprise Cloud, go with AWS or go with Azure, it could have been a different assessment. We didn't just go straight into Azure, we looked at it for that customer, and another customer, if we were to do it tomorrow, may come with a different outcome. Yep. So, now we've talked about the process we took and tried to get you to realize that you need to add a bit of discipline to that process. What we'd like to do is talk to you about where we are now and what we've learned, because we've learned a hell of a lot.
Okay, so probably the first thing I want to start off with to say was let's get some size and scope to this, because I know myself we see a lot of conversations around cloud stuff and it's always seemed to be 5 and 6 servers or a dozen servers, that sort of stuff in simple services. So I thought I'd just sort of give you some numbers where we are today, right? So. Yeah, we have somewhere in 200 plus servers actually for the organization today. We have them distributed actually over 2 regions in Azure. We actually have them distributed over US West and actually in Europe itself. We've got a bit of storage. We've got a lot of everything actually. The SAP environment actually is probably the largest chunk of the infrastructure for the organization. And as a result, we've actually have quite a significant number of SQL servers. So we've actually used SQL always on. We've got probably 30 pairs of SQL servers in the environment today for this customer to supporting their organization. We've got .NET web services. We've got Active Directory. We're actually integrating with AAD. We're discussing Office 365 integration. So we have a lot of the moving parts. We have looked at a number of the Azure components, like the file services aspect, and in seeing how we can exploit that. We're actually, and that has some limitations, and we can talk about that a bit later on, but we are looking at individual components of that. So we can say we've got a pretty much a widespread use of a number of components today actually being used in Azure. So that sort of sets the tone on actually where some of our experience is coming through and actually why some of the things we've done. So this will probably sort of highlight some of our challenges that we have. And we have had some challenges. And we've solved most of the challenges. And we still have a few. But as the technology is maturing, we certainly managed to adapt. You have to change your way of thinking in some respects. And you'll see that shortly as well.
Yep.
Right. So I think hopefully the takeaway message today is typical on-premise environments, let's call them clouds, even though I personally don't like the term too much, actually are very, very different to the public cloud. Fundamentally, I think one of the biggest shocks I have seen from most of the engineers that I've worked with so far is the concept of actually Azure just turns servers off every once in a while. Okay, so if you think server-orientated, you'll struggle initially with bringing your cloud into the Azure space, okay? What you need to do is you need to lift your thinking up to services. So the availability, applications, it's the thinking you need to have to actually be successful in a cloud implementation. So one of the things that we see here is we went from the get-go knowing that, yes, Azure has rules, and we have seen them actually abide by the rules. So things like maintenance schedules, host restarts and VMs being shut down on us, we actually do see on a daily basis. So the key message I'm saying is when you start to actually look at using Azure as a platform is design and plan primarily for outages. It's all about applications, it's all about the services. It's not about the servers themselves. Unfortunately, and especially in New Zealand organisations, that means actually implementing a whole lot of HA stuff inside Azure. And so usually the first thing we see is actually the cost consequences of that. And an example of that is actually the use of SQL and actually having to move up to SQL Enterprise for actually any of the database use inside SQL, unless you actually look at using the SQL service in Azure itself. Okay. So key message, sorry Nick, is this happens. Plan for it. Yep. Don't be worried about it, just make sure that your applications are resilient to the stuff, right? Operationally, it gives you challenges, I'll tell you that, and we'll talk about it a wee bit later on. But yeah, key message.
Yep. And don't think that stuff isn't going to happen. You know, like with roadworks, sometimes you get told that, you know, there's going to be maintenance on the road for a scheduled change. Sometimes there's just an outage. Your applications have to handle that. If you don't, and you've not got two in there, like in this instance, if it was only one lane road and it got closed, you're out of business. So respect it, take it seriously, plan for it, test it, and make sure that your applications are robust and handle this sort of infrastructure stuff gracefully.
So it's interesting, the conversation I had with the cloud stuff, and some people go, you know, where am I going to be in the next few years and stuff like this. So this has actually got two messages here, actually. There's a technical one and a personal one, pretty much. I'll start with the technical side here first. So you have to, before you go into the cloud space, you have to actually architect it. Therefore, you need people who understand architecture, and you also need to be able to design what you're doing. So what goes with that is all the necessary design standards and practices that you do today on an enterprise. So things like naming standards, right? Capacity planning. It's one of the things we had to do. We've actually had to do capacity planning actually for this organisation as well, because capacity is there are actually constraints in Azure from a capacity. So therefore, things like subscriptions inside Azure actually you have to plan for, and actually saying how many of these subscriptions do you need based on the amount of resource you're going to put in a per subscription, and how the subscriptions actually then overlay the regions. So there's a whole lot of things that you need to be thinking through, and I've shown here just a simple diagram. Actually, of just a three-layer service, not even a complicated one, and it just shows you sort of all the boxes, all the things that you need to think we need to be thinking about when we actually go and deploy Azure. So things like availability sets, DNS, load balancers. You need to understand actually how load balancing works inside Azure, right? With the recent introduction of the internal load balancing, actually you've got to get a pretty good grips of it. So prior to that, enterprises would have had a real struggle getting infrastructure in prior to actually Microsoft releasing the internal load balancing services. So key message here is pretty much there's a lot of thinking. It's you'll hear probably a lot of conversations on it's a quick click, run, power, shell, and you've got 20, 30 servers up. If you don't put the necessary thinking in, you have consequences. One of the ones we've personally found, and we've made mistakes and then we had to recorrect them at some cost to us. Naming standards was what? Okay, we had server infrastructure naming kind of standards used. Typically you'd find in most enterprises. Then we got the bill out. The billing engine comes out and you actually have your bills. So today if we export the billing information out for this organization, there's probably 2,000 or 3,000 line items from the bill engine that says this is what you've got in Azure. Now, if you don't understand what that is, you don't know what you're paying for and where it is, and so effectively you have to bring all your naming standards back into a point that actually, believe it or not, you can understand the billing. All right. So that key pieces, because we actually had to unfold that, and actually we had to then backtrack on a lot of our naming standards, because what we thought was traditionally typical infrastructure naming space, traditionally very common names, naming conventions, we had to unpick. And as you can see, you probably can't quite see, we ended up actually with some very ugly namespace naming conventions, just because the way the billing engine actually produced the results.
The last point there, the reason we put the skyscrapers up is, you know, when you look on the face of it, like these building the skyscrapers in Dubai and such, these things are going up really quickly, and you think that's amazing. You know, I want to get a piece of that. Why can't we do that in New Zealand? But what you need to realize is there's still a lot of planning and architecture gone into designing those systems, and a lot of architecture gone into making sure that they can ramp up quickly and they're stable, and you can get the scale. So you can get the power of it, but you do need to think about it properly.
Okay, so probably one of the to move enterprises actually into Azure, right? So there's probably a couple of models of thinking I would suggest you'd have here. Delivering cloud services in the true sense actually doesn't need any connectivity back to your on-premise environment in the true sense. And you see a lot of those discussions. That one of the things we haven't seen a lot of actually is, how do you truly provide hybrid solutions for the enterprise or even mid-size organization? So today, obviously, Azure has the VPN connectivity, and effectively they've just introduced the WAN services like the Express Route. Okay, so today we're actually using the VPN connectivity ourselves, but I would suggest that actually that's probably as useful for sort of dev and test environments. If you're truly going to actually run production environments in a hybrid mode, you have to look at Express Route. Okay.
For critical applications, you need strong SLAs. It's not just, you're not just putting a website up there when you're starting to put some of your crown jewels in there. And you realize that the experience of the system is not just the server performance anymore. You know, the network speed, predictable bandwidth, et cetera, it becomes a critical indicator of how the end user experiences that service. So don't forget about the network.
So additionally to the networks, a number of challenges we faced was actually when we started putting services actually into Azure around from a security aspect now. So it's an interesting subject, security. It's a field in its own right, I must admit. But when we assessed actually putting services actually into Azure, especially public facing services, and it's in a hybrid mode, that means effectively you've got another point of entry into your organization, right? So today Azure has what I'd call very elementary endpoint firewall rolling sets. Okay, so in general they're actually probably okay for certain applications, but in certain applications they're not. So effectively as part of actually us implementing a number of services actually in Azure, we actually had to use a number of third parties to actually also bolt on top of those key services to ensure that we had content security, edge protection. And we actually had to specifically design Azure infrastructure actually with very similar thinkings to sort of like DMZ architectures. But today with Azure, obviously, single NIC, single IP address does actually limit a lot of choice actually in what you have. There are one or two suppliers in the market that actually have technology sets that help you actually put in some technology around the edges. In short, you have to actually think through it, design for it, and actually you end up having to actually use third-party products on the edges to actually make sure that you're pretty comfortable with things.
Yep. So don't assume that security is taken for granted in Azure. You've got to build it yourself. You've still got to build your perimeter.
Right. This is another common question I get asked. Why is it so hard? Why can't I just pick it up? Why can't I just move it and throw it over there in the sense?
You've seen the demo. You've seen the demo. It looks easy. Why are you talking about this stuff? Why are you trying to scare us?
Right.
It's because we've learned.
So from experience, so with when most on-premise infrastructure has been sort of thought out, designed and planned for on-premise environments. They haven't been considered for things like the HA aspects of requirements for Azure. Actually, and there's a lot, and there's a number of other components actually that just don't transition very well up to Azure straight from a forklift perspective. So things like there's a number of people, a number of organisations that use things like the D drive, for example, and operating systems for application installations and stuff. So in Azure, that actually D drive is currently used as a temp swap file in a sense. Therefore, you actually have to unpick that stuff. Therefore, just picking up forklifting servers and putting them straight in, you'll collide into these issues that actually in Azure typically, based on how the legacy apps were traditionally made and actually the pre-configurations that you are picking up, we've found it actually more efficient to actually rebuild servers rather than forklift them, okay? For many reasons. And as you can see up here, a mixture of things. We're seeing, obviously, the OS upgrades, probably not a big factor except for organisations that still are running Windows 2003 and X32, so 2008 32-bit versions, right? They are generally, that you're going to have challenges actually migrating those from an operating system perspective. They're not supported in Azure, in short, yeah. Database upgrades is one, obviously. Organisations still running SQL 2000 and 2005. Again, the availability is the thing, is the crux there. You have to get them up to like SQL 2012 or 14 to actually deliver the always-on capability to give you the availability you require for putting inside Azure. As set up there, architecture, the actual architecture of apps, a lot of the legacy apps, they weren't considered for actually HA or high availability or failover whatsoever. Organisations that use clustering, shared file system clustering, currently is not supported in Azure today. Therefore, you have to actually consider how you're going to actually move applications that are used on a shared file cluster. So what that leads on to is actually, we have a sort of a line in our group now, PowerShell's our friend. PowerShell, you would need to actually be very thorough and have a very good understanding of PowerShell. There is very little you can do in Azure through the management panel. You actually literally have to PowerShell most stuff. And examples of that is setting up SQL clusters, always on. To configure the load balancing, internal load balancing is all PowerShell driven. Connecting up your VNets, actually the VPN connections, it's all PowerShell. Pretty much you end up living and breathing in PowerShell. So it's very powerful though. So we have actually started scripting server builds straight from basically PowerShell. Azure supports server capturing. You can actually capture inside Azure if people have done it. That's very good for things like Citrix servers and stuff that we've been using for. But in general though, you have to script your server builds. Right? What happens, once you have the scripting sorted out and the build sorted out, DR and deploying to regions becomes a lot more easier.
And scaling up and scaling down. So when someone comes to you and says, I need another environment over here for a project that's going to run 6 months, and I don't want to turn, I want to keep my BAU environments going the same as they are, it makes life easier then. But like with the automation industry, there's a lot of effort that goes into the automation. Once it's nailed, it's really powerful. But don't underestimate the sort of investment you need to make into automating these things to get it to enterprise grade. Yep. So again, there's a lot of words on the slide there. What I really want to talk to you about is looking at the road picture and saying key messages are the stuff you've got might not be ready, right, to go in the cloud, to handle failover gracefully. Might not be supported. Your vendors, who you have the software from, might not support it. So there's a lot of things you need to think about. So if it's your own custom applications, you need to think about, are they stateless? Can I centralize a session state so they can run over to? What happens if I take one of these boxes out? If you went to any customer today and said, right, can I turn one of your prod servers off quickly without, any planning? They'd say you're crazy, but that's what happens sort of for maintenance. need to review how your software is working, retry policies to make sure you're not losing data or you're not duplicating up on retries. You need to work really closely with your vendors and get them on side. You know, there's no point putting stuff up there. It runs, and then 2 weeks into live, you have an issue. You ring the software vendor up and say, "Hey, I've got an issue. Can you help me under my support contract?" They'll say, "Sure. Please replicate it on premise because we don't certify our product in Azure." You know, can you imagine the stress and the grey hairs you'll get then? So you need to think about it carefully. You need to include software guys. Yep, it's not just an infrastructure piece anymore. You need to work tightly between your infrastructure and your software guys. And not all applications are suitable for public cloud. Yep, a lot of them are. A lot of them you can remediate to make them to hit those criteria. But don't just say we're going to move everything there because it's a nice new buzzword. Do it for the right reasons. You know, make sure that your application and the effort to migrate that, or that risk profile to migrate that, it is acceptable for the benefits. You know, it is for some people, it isn't for others. So think about it carefully. And for an enterprise, a hybrid cloud and a slow, steady, staged approach into getting this stuff working and learning and building that capability for the new world where you need to start thinking about things differently is definitely our recommended approach. The other point I wanted to touch on quickly is enterprise service management. So a few of you have been to the demonstrations previously where you've seen, you know, the portal and you start thinking, do I need sort of enterprise server management and enterprise ITIL sort of processes and practices? And our honest answer is yes, you probably need it now more than ever. You know, so if you imagine the portal looks really nice when you've got a few lists of VMs in there, but when you start mapping that list of VMs to all your cloud services and your availability groups, it gets quite confusing. And you've got all these outages to plan for. The complexity is getting harder. So don't think that ITIL, it needs to tweak and change, but you still need that discipline. Capacity planning, you know, you still need to... capacity planning takes a different sort of bent. So instead of being constrained by an infrastructure level and the time to procure new hardware or storage, there's a few tiny things you need to think about. Brett mentioned on subscriptions, but the capacity planning goes into financial planning. So I'll give you an example. You know, you want to have a quick play with SQL Server Always On. You know, you crank up some big machines, you whack it on there, you go on holiday for a month, and you forgot to turn it off. You know, you come back off holiday and your manager's at your desk saying, I've got this big bill, can you please explain? You know, what's this thing? So capacity planning, you need to start thinking about financial planning more and the implications of that. You know, any of you guys now at the moment, how many guys give the development team access to production environment to turn on and on VMs and install stuff themselves? In an enterprise, that's generally not done. So you still need to think about it from what's safe from an enterprise perspective. You need to think about things in terms of service, not server. So I could have VMs going up and down in Azure, but because the way I've configured them and designed them, my end users don't even notice. Yeah, that's the key. So you need to look at managing your service and making sure you've got uptime to the end user, not so much server uptime. And you might need to review your tools. So two points we mentioned earlier is around, you know, network becomes important because the performance to the end user is a factor of the sort of server performance plus the network performance. So you might need to start using different tools to monitor your environment to check that the end user experience is acceptable.
Just on a comment on that, it's actually, the tools is a very interesting one actually. We see currently it's very slow uptake actually on a lot of what I call monitoring type tool sets to get out of server monitoring into service monitoring. It's one of the one of the shortages we actually currently see today. So you've got tool sets like SCOM and stuff. It takes a lot of work to actually go and actually get those set up as a service monitoring. A lot of the Navris, those sort of tool sets, there's plenty of them. Most people have lots of different ones, actually tend to be very focused on server monitoring. And as you can find very quickly, when you start delivering out of cloud services type of scenarios, actually you need to be lifting that up and actually looking at the service itself. And it takes a lot of work for people with actually, you know, if anyone who's actually done the work, they'll understand when you actually start looking through how the services fall in and how they're monitored and actually the relationships between all the other services are. So it's not something I would suggest you underestimate as part of actually deploying site cloud services.
Don't just whack it in there and not talk to the support guys. There's an upskilling of the BAU teams for support. There's an upskilling of what to do with alerts, what to do with the process, how to do billing. You know, you need to talk to all people within the business to make sure they understand the implications, rather than so you don't get any surprises. So, just as a wrap up, Azure and any public cloud is not just for websites. So there's a lot of things you'll see in demonstrations, how easy it is to deploy websites and stuff. Yeah, it's fantastic functionality, but there's other, you know, you can run enterprises in there. If you respect it, plan it, test it, and understand that you're likely to need a hybrid cloud with a WAN in between. And lastly, there's no perfect fit. Don't go out of here thinking, my enterprise, the answer is Azure. I don't need to look at this. I don't need to look at any other providers. I don't need to look at, an enterprise cloud within New Zealand, like the Datacom one, or an enterprise, a public cloud, AWS or Azure. You need to look at your strategy, what you need to get out of from a business point of view, your SLAs, your return to service, your operation. You need to look at your applications. You need to think about who can help me. Who do I need to involve in this journey? Support, software vendors, people who know about cloud and have made mistakes like us and learned the hard way. Once you know what you have and where you want to go, you also then finally need to spend a lot of time on the planning, you know, the failover planning, the testing, and do it slowly, you know. Build it up incrementally, learn, do it with low sort of criticality applications, build up that experience across the board. So, yeah, key one, you know, square peg, round hole. It's not always the same. Think about it carefully. Mm. So what we'd like to do now is just open up to the floor for questions to see if anybody's got any questions. Yeah. I think when we say we're on the journey, we're still on the journey. You know, it's not done and dusted. Like Brett said, we've still got a number of outstanding challenges. The key for success for us was we respected the change at the beginning and we're scared and we did a lot of planning. People thought we were going over the edge, and you know, it's an infrastructure forklift. What, it's a data center move. Why do I need to talk to application guys? So getting the key to success, I think, is having integrated teams of application specialists, infrastructure specialists, support specialists, all working together. Yep.
How did you achieve a single control plane or governance over your hybrid or cloud deployments? Because I think that's the biggest challenge.
Yep. So from a government's point of view, we haven't changed the the government cycle hasn't changed, so we're still operating the same governance model from a sort of from a support point of view, from a project program point of view. Yeah, one risk is if you start bypassing that governance. Yep, just in the corner in the red. Yep.
Yeah, we actually we have some limited experience in actually. One of the things we found during the process of actually going through that IIS, PaaS and SaaS kind of piece of work, some of the things like the SQL service in Azure has some limitations, especially around people that write code that uses the SQL admin service. Right, for example, and so if you've got applications that use those services into that cloud service, you can't use those. So what we found pretty much is you have a set criteria that you need to match to be able to run applications for the SQL service. Yep. And we couldn't fit into any of those.
Yep.
So we did fall back into the SQL, actually running SQL as an infrastructure as a service.
So for new applications, it's worth a detailed investigation. Our applications wouldn't fit because they were using technologies that aren't supported yet in SQL database.
Yep. From a high availability aspect.
Yep.
It depends where you're going on this one. So
So the
levels of guarantee are around the same, aren't they, in Azure? I think you'll find it's 99.95% or 999% on the SQL. Yep. So we haven't tested the availability of SQL Azure service.
Yep.
Because we couldn't actually make most of applications even fit into the service for a start. So is that probably an easy way to a clearer way of answering that?
Yep. Any other questions? Yep.
Multi-tenancy?
Yep, so we're a software, large software development company as well, so and I look up to the software team, so when we saw the billing first, we thought, do we need to write an app or something? But the rate of change in the Azure services that have been added with new portals and new features, we decided that we just set up our processes so that, it's cheaper to train some of the guys who do the billing. Because the billing's aligned to your enterprise. For a big enterprise, it goes on your EA agreement. So the same people who are doing your software, your LA licensing, it's those people who are the first touch point for receipt of the billing. There's a question over here. Yep. No. So there was a few segments in there. One was just the run cost of the VMs. Some platforms needed to double up, some didn't. There was additional license costs. There's the server management license or support costs. But there was also a sliver of the enterprise support. So when you purchase these, there's different levels of support you can get for both Azure and AWS. But obviously, for an enterprise, you need to make sure you've got that enterprise support hooked in so that you get the service from whichever provider when you need it. Yep. So basically, include all those prices. Don't miss them out, else you'll come unstuck. So we haven't finished. So 200 in there at the moment.
We've delivered those in 3 months.
Yep.
We've put 200 servers in 3 months.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. We've done the planning. I've got a really good PowerShell engineer working with me. He's our friend. My life. Yeah. The deployment in Azure can be done. It's like hypervisor. Most people have hypervisors today. Yeah, I can put in 200 servers on my hypervisor on premise within hours if I really wanted to, right? It was actually all the effort is around the designing. We've put a lot of work into the load balancing space. So we have a very good understanding on the load balancing, especially with SQL. We've had to break new ground, like SQL 2014 and internal load balancing wasn't even officially supported, so we've actually worked through all of that. So the effort's actually being in the prep work, and once we've got the prep work, my PowerShell experts just go, yep, give it to me, and it's 20 minutes later, right?
And because it's such a big undertaking, we've also aligned it with some business improvements on applications. So some of the service that we've migrated aligned with major projects that need to go through and retest these things anyway. So we've sort of split the program up to align with the application team so that it's not just a big project just for a data center move, basically. So you need to plan it smartly.
Just a question. What kind of network access is that? So currently they're just using the internet. They've got like a 20 meg, they actually got two 20 meg circuits. Is this where you're sort of going for the question? Yep. It's a good question, actually. Yep. It's funny, actually, when we started putting the slides together, I said to Nick, actually, on the side, when I put that technical one up, I said, we've got an hour's worth of talking in this space alone, and we want to cover through all the rest of the other stuff, right? So we actually, the DNS was an interesting challenge, especially with the hybrid mode. We actually have Active Directory distributed actually from on-premise into the cloud. This organization actually is what I call fairly complicated for New Zealand size, right? So they're a forest with four domains in it, and then they've got another forest actually for, in another space for security reasons. And so we've actually had to replicate quite a number of domain controllers all that throughout Azure just for those services. Now, yep, we did all the sites and services, all the standard stuff practices you had to do, right? So again, we had to put pairs of DCs up there because, again, we could have a DC that gets turned off in the middle of the night or over the maintenance weekends. So we had to do all that kind of work, right? So one of the biggest challenges we saw, and this is, and we gave some feedback to Microsoft on this originally, was prior to actually the internal load balancer being deployed, September, I think it was this year, July, I think it was.
General availability.
Actually, it would have been very, very difficult for any enterprise to deploy in Azure, right? And that was a significant bonus for us at the time when that came through for us. I'll explain why. You can imagine you've got network connectivity between on-premise and actually Azure. Now, prior to July, if you needed to load balance or we put your HA in, you actually had to use external IP addresses to connect to the service. So if you can imagine now, that external IP address is an internet address and you're actually sitting in a private network, and so you say, I want to connect to that service, and most people's networks will go, I've gone through this way to the firewall out through the internet to connect to your service that should have been through a VPN circuit. So when the internal load balancer came through and the ability for us to actually start assigning internal addresses, we actually managed to get all the traffic now working internally between our VPN network.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think like Brett touched on, there's a lot of lessons we've learned during this, some that weren't obvious to us. It isn't apples and apples, it's apples and pears. So if you've got any questions, we've got our email up there. Just drop us an email and we'll try and help you out, because we couldn't cover everything in just 1 hour. Yep. Okay, we're probably up. So, yep, the usual spiel, fill in your questionnaires, win some stuff. Thanks.